what's going on, everybody? Happy Tuesday. Welcome to another edition of Mean Streets, powered by FTN right here on Game Plus Network. Chris Meany here with you, riding solo. We got guests lined up for the rest of the week, but you got to bear with me here for the next 46 minutes or so. If you're watching live on our FTN Network YouTube page, smash the like button. If you have any comments, any questions, you can leave them there. Even if you're watching the replay here on FTN Network or on our websites, FTNBets.com, FTNFantasy.com, FTNDaily.com. I always circle back on these videos. Of course, there's no action on the ice tonight, but we do have a ton of action around the diamond tonight. So if you had any questions like fantasy baseball questions, starter sit stuff, or any like betting props, anything like that, you can always leave the question there. This show also available on iTunes and Spotify. We're going to dive into some MLB props and some picks a little bit later on in the show, and also just hit the fantasy baseball waiver wire. It's something that we haven't really done in quite some time. It's been a lot of just NHL and NBA, the football team previews, and we will continue, and we'll stick inside the NFC East. Today, it's all about the Washington Commanders, just another quarterback for Washington and Terry McLaurin. There's some off-field stuff. Does he re-up with Washington? They've done a decent job of at least trying to surround a quarterback with some weapons, not just being the Terry McLaurin show. They've drafted some wide receivers over the past couple of seasons. They brought in Curtis Samuel last year. Didn't see a whole lot from him. Antonio Gibson was drafted out of the backfield, converted wide receiver to running back a couple years ago. And then Johan Dotson drafted this past year in the NFL draft. So another weapon for what it will be Carson Wentz's probably last chance at a QB1 role in the NFL. We'll get into Washington, their team implied total. This time last year, they were one of the sleeper teams for people. I mean, remember, they won the division a couple years ago. Philly just let them have it, right? Doug Peterson was eventually canned. Now he's back in the NFL as a head coach for the Jacksonville Jaguars. He and his Jags are in the news. We'll touch on them in the opening block here in just a few minutes. But, you know, Carson Wentz, or Washington rather, I mean, Carson Wentz is on my mind because obviously Washington's on my mind. But for the Commanders now, and the football team last year, it's going to take me a little bit, I think, to get used to that. Last year, they were the sleeper team for people because they made the playoffs the previous year. Yeah, Philly let them in at the end. They rested their starters. They got the W, and the Giants are still upset about that. And Joe Judge is still probably ticked off on his couch at home without a job now with the Giants. But they had a really good defense. The quarterback play has really never been there, but the defense was good. And then the defense took a major step back last year. They did suffer some injuries, of course, but offensively, that's been the issue for this team. Ron Rivera has done a good job since he's been there with Washington, but they just need a little bit more offensively. And I don't know if Carson Wentz is the answer, but this will be Carson Wentz's last go. But again, a lot of just optimism last year for this squad. Daily Handle in the house. I don't think Washington is going to be good. I don't see Wentz rising to the occasion. Extremely injury prone. You know, I thought he had an okay year last year. He did stay healthy. You know, he really just needed to hand the ball off to Jonathan Taylor and, you know, rely on the defense. But he couldn't get it done towards the end of the season. Of course, that final game in Jacksonville where they needed a W and they couldn't win that game. But if Frank Reich couldn't fix him, who, you know, had spent some time with him in Philadelphia and he was close to, you know, an MVP season, he got votes. The Eagles went on to win the Super Bowl without him, but he was a big reason why they had home field advantage throughout the entire playoffs. And, you know, that was key for Philadelphia winning the Super Bowl, to have that home field advantage against Atlanta, against, you know, Minnesota, and then have that bye, of course. But actually, did they have the bye? Doesn't matter. Big season for Carson Wentz. If Reich couldn't fix him and let him go, not great, right? Because they were with him when they drafted him, and now, you know, it's a big year for Carson Wentz, and he's not set up with a ton of weapons, and Terry McLaurin holding out doesn't help Carson Wentz at the moment, right? These guys need to have reps. Carson needs his guy there, his number one wide receiver. Let's get some chemistry with them, and now he's kind of, I kind of feel bad for him, right? Because it's a situation where it's not great off the hop, and he needs to have a big year to kind of stick inside the NFL. It's amazing that he's back inside the NFC East. So we will dive into last night's Game 3 of the Stanley Cup Finals, a big W from Tampa, kind of how we expected, I think some of us anyways. Dangle Batselli is live already on our FTN Network YouTube page, but a friendly reminder that it is going to air on Game Plus Network this evening at 5 Eastern. We had Drew Livingstone on the show. Those in the Anthem and Sports and Entertainment Control Room know all about producer 2, camera 2, Drew Livingstone. Diehard Avs fan. He jumped on the show. He was kind enough to jump on for about 15, 20 minutes. He had like a Cale Makar playoff beard going on. And if you've seen Makar, it's not a whole lot. He did have a sweet little setup in Av's man cave there. He's a diehard Colorado fan. So it was nice to just get his perspective on the series. Now we have a series. Tampa bounced back last night. They've been basically perfect on home ice. Andre Vasilevskiy's been really, really strong on home ice as well. And we've been hard on Nikita Kucherov on this show. We were really hard on him yesterday, and he showed up in a big way yesterday with some shot props. And he did leave with an injury, but it does look like he's going to be good. Some shot props. He had some shot attempts. He had double-digit shot attempts. He had six shots, and he had a couple apples as well. But the Lightning bounced back. We were on Tampa and the over. It wasn't all good. We did get some assist props that we liked. Valeri Nichushkin left a lot on the board for us. We needed another shot from him. We needed to hit the score sheet for like six or seven more units. But I think we were on the positive side overall. We just had him in like three or four parlays to get two shots. And we were literally an inch away from six or seven more units. And we were all talking about that in our FTN Bets Discord channel. And if you want to be part of the family, why not? Like, sign up, use the promo code NHL Meanie. You get the picks from everybody across all the sports, projections, tools, access to the Discord channel. I see the hammer in here, Corey Perry goal. We were all over in the FTN Discord channel as well, as we saw Braden Point not playing that game. Game time decision really late, like about 10 minutes before the game. Point ruled out, Perry in. We've talked a lot on this show and Dangle Batselli as well. Corey Perry's role increases without Braden Point because he's up on that top power play unit. And Perry made NHL history last night. He is the first player in the Stanley Cup playoffs to have four goals. Excuse me, Stanley Cup finals to have four goals on four different teams. Of course, he did it with the Ducks back in the day. Won a Stanley Cup with Anaheim. And then just a couple years ago with Dallas, as he lost to the Lightning in the Stanley Cup Finals. Last year, as a member of the Canadiens, lost to the Lightning in Stanley Cup Finals. And then this year, a member of the Lightning, now down 2-1 against the Colorado Avalanche in the Stanley Cup Finals. So we'll talk about that series in the next block. We'll kind of break down last night, preview the game tomorrow. Of course, we'll be with you here, Main Streets, on Game Plus Network, breaking down that one and giving some more props. But it wasn't all bad last night. We did have some things that hit. We just needed a Nichushkin goal. Yeah, Troy, Nichushkin goal. Taken away was absolute pain last night. He was literally like an inch. It was an inch away. It was the right call. It was offside. He would have scored the first goal last night, and we were kind of well on our way. We were feeling it in the Discord channel, but nonetheless, it just did not work out that way. It's all right. We'll dive into that. We got, as I mentioned, some MLB props and some picks. We'll dive into. Yesterday was an exciting day in Major League Baseball. We talked about Cole McClanahan. These guys cruise past their strikeout prop. McClanahan has done it in every single start but one. We talked about the matchup with Webb and Freed in Atlanta and San Fran, a nice little pitching duel as well. And we were all over Rafael Devers and the Red Sox yesterday. We did not get the Mike Trout total bases. He was stuck on one single. He had a rocket to third in the bottom of the ninth, but it was right to the third baseman. So we didn't get that. It wasn't all good on this show, but hopefully we can bounce back. We also got to, like I said, hit the waiver wire because we haven't really done that with all the other sports happening. We have the NBA draft this week as well on Thursday. We'll dive into some props tomorrow or on Thursday's show. Maybe do some PGA stuff. I meant to say that off the top. There's always so much I want to get to. I have notes in front of me, and right here it's like, man, I've gone 8 minutes here off the top. I didn't mention the NFL stat of the day. Maybe we'll save it, Tyler, and we'll get into it in the next block because I do have some NFL news and notes. But the latest to join the LIV Tour is Brooks Koepka reportedly leaving the PGA Tour after making a big fuss last week about reporters asking him if he's thinking about the LIV Tour, and he says, no, I'm not thinking about it. Like, how dare you? Paraphrasing, but clearly he was thinking about it, and now he is reportedly joined LIV Tour. He's expected to play at the Travelers. I don't know. There's some confusion there. I don't know if he officially signs and he hits a ball. I guess on Thursday he could get fined or suspended. It's hard to keep up, guys. Not going to lie. But he joins his old buddy Bryson over at the LIV Tour. And I also saw Answer and did Morikawa. I think I saw that report too. Call Morikawa potentially. That's a big loss. I do like him. But I don't know. I guess it opens up the door for some other players on the PGA Tour to maybe, you know, compete for a championship. But I don't like it. I don't like everyone leaving. We'll take a quick break. You don't leave. Hang around. We're going to talk about O'Neill Cruz's big day, his season debut yesterday for the Pirates. He was fantastic at the plate, in the field, running the bases. Did some cool things last night. So a lot to get to here on Mean Streets, and we will break and we'll start block two with the NFL stat of the day. We are going to talk a lot about DeAndre Swift and a couple other news items that are filtering through here in the NFL. Keep her locked. Welcome back in Mean Streets Live here on Game Plus Network. So we're going to save the baseball talk for the next block, or actually we'll do the NHL in the next block, and then we're pushing things back here just a little bit because I rambled off the top for 10 minutes. Why not? Okay. The NFL stat of the day is actually courtesy of producer Tyler. I love it. He's got some little sneaky NFL stats. And of course, the amazing graphic is from our guy, George, who still, you know, helps with the production of the show. Of course, I think he's hanging out live. I don't know. He's doing some things behind the scenes. I'm surprised he hasn't mentioned anything about Brooks yet, but look at this graphic. I love the blue in the eye from the line, but this is DeAndre Swift here. First 10 games before he suffered the injury, he returned towards the end of the season for a couple games. I think we can just call them write-offs. But nonetheless, this is what he was doing here in the first part of the season. He was a top five running back before the injury happened. First 10 games, 13.7 attempts, 55 rushing yards per game. He had 6.7 targets, 5.3 receptions, and 42 receiving yards per game. 18.6 full point in a PPR league. Pretty strong. Now, just to kind of get into a little bit more with Swift, and to kind of put that into perspective, so not everybody plays in a full point setting. I know DraftKings, NFFC leagues, which we reference, those are full point settings, 1 point for the catch. I play in a lot of half point settings. I think that's kind of the way to go. I don't really love the fact that a running back can catch the ball behind the line of scrimmage and like get stuffed at the line and still come away with a point. You see a lot of, you know, slot guys rack up double-digit catches on like 44 yards and, you know, they have like so many fantasy points, but to each our own. Like, you guys can obviously do whatever you want. Every league's a little different, but I mostly will talk half point. But when I reference, you know, ADPs, NFFC, like I said, you know, it is going to be a full point setting there. But RB 19 and a half point setting, 13.7 fantasy points per game overall, was RB 13. And just to kind of put that into perspective, before the injury, in a full point setting, at 18 fantasy points per game, which was the graphic, you know, Tyler, if you want to bring that up one more time, yeah, 18.6. So to put that into perspective from a full point PPR setting, this guy was RB4. Like, obviously the injury happened and he didn't get there. From a full point setting, it was 16.1 fantasy points per game. Overall, that's RB10. But if he could have maintained that pace that he was on, and say that, I mean, 10 games is a pretty decent sample. Say he only gets, maybe he falls back a couple points and he's flirting with like 16.9 or 17.3 fantasy points. It's still RB8 overall in fantasy points per game. He was very Austin Eckler-like. And if you look at some of his numbers, I mean, 62 receptions on 78 targets. In the 2 years, he's got 108 receptions on 135 targets. He's got 809 receiving yards, 17 touchdowns in those 2 years. He was really, really explosive out of the backfield catching balls. And the offensive line is, I think, one of the better offensive lines in Detroit. I think he's a really good target in fantasy football drafts, especially if you are playing in that full point setting, that PPR setting. So NFFC high stakes leagues, since the start of May, we're pushing the end of June here. We're getting a pretty good sample. Drafts are starting to really ramp up here now. And he is going as RB8, 14th overall, his ADP. He's got a min pick of 8. So he is going in the first round, towards the end, and he's got a max of 22. So he's really not lasting to the third. You know, I think best case, you can maybe get him at the end of the second round. But the offense is going to be better. You know, they got some new additions in Chark and Jameson Williams. And, you know, I don't think Jared Goff is that bad of a quarterback. We all laugh and, you know, everyone takes shots at Jared Goff. He's okay. He's not a bad quarterback. He made Cooper Kupp and Robert Woods productive in fantasy. We saw some moments from TJ Hawkinson last year. We certainly saw some moments from Amon-Ra St. Brown as well. So Detroit is up on the rise. They're competitive. Clearly, Dan Campbell has them playing competitive football. They bring it every day. They're a team that covered a lot last year as well. I think Swift is a pretty good target. And there's still some holes defensively. So there's still, you know, you can expect, I think, 40-plus catches from DeAndre Swift, maybe a couple garbage time catches as well. But I think overall, he's a pretty good target. A couple other news items that I did find here this morning. We got Joe Roxroad of The Athletic, who covers the Titans. He said Treylon Burks projects as the number 3 wide receiver for the Titans this season. Of course, they made the big trade at the NFL draft, getting rid of A.J. Brown. Opened up a lot of opportunity for a guy like Trey Burks. But According to reports, again from The Athletic, that Robert Woods has created a little bit of chemistry with Ryan Tannehill. Why not? Robert Woods is a really good wide receiver. It's not surprising to hear. I do believe he will be the number one option for Ryan Tannehill in the passing game. But then there was also the report that chemistry is not only is the chemistry there between Robert Woods and Ryan Tannehill, but Nick Westbrook-Ikhine is also a guy that's making some strides as a playmaker, was the exact quote there from Joe of The Athletic. I don't fully believe the Westbrook thing. I'm sure he's making strides. He's not really getting drafted. I think the upside does belong with Treylon Burks there, but it is going to be a run first team in Tennessee, you know, led by Derrick Henry, of course. Ryan Tannehill kind of calls his own number as well. You know, for Treylon Burks, I do feel like he's a good target in fantasy drafts. I think if you leave him being maybe your wide receiver 4 as a guy that you could roll out as a flex, you know, I think it may take some time. Certainly it does for some rookie wide receivers, but man, you got to think, you know, Robert Woods is still recovering from that knee injury and, you know, he's past 30 now. We could see Treylon Burks have a pretty significant role in terms of all the other rookie wide receivers, you know, Drake London as well, but he's got, you know, Kyle Pitts there as the number one option. These two guys are, you know, I project them for a lot of volume. I think that they'll get a lot of opportunity in year one. We'll keep an eye on how things play out with Treylon Burks there. The Jags were really in the news over the past 24 hours or so. James Robinson, Doug Peterson mentioned him in the last block. He's a new head coach of the Jacksonville Jaguars. Thank goodness. If you're a Jags fan, I mean, there's reason to be optimistic and excited about this team. Last year was a complete crapshoot with Urban Meyer as the head coach. I mean, let's not get started on all the things that Urban Meyer did last year, but one of them was not giving the ball to James Robinson and just messing around with Carlos Hyde. Week in and week out was completely frustrating because we saw James Robinson have such a terrific season the year before as a rookie. He finished, I believe, as RB4, RB5. He was really, really good. And, you know, if you drafted him, it was an absolute headache. And, of course, he suffered the Achilles injury in December. And he's going to miss the first part of the season. But Doug Peterson did say that he views James Robinson as a three-down back when healthy. Now, you know, we don't have a great history or a track record of seeing these running backs, you know, recover from Achilles injury. I mean, most recently we do have Cam Akers who returned, and that, you know, it could be the outlier. We'll see how productive he is this year. And he wasn't all that productive in the playoffs last year for the Rams. But he went and got some tough run defenses, but he did get a bulk of the touches and the carries. And I think volume is very, very important. And that was very telling for me that Sean McVay was giving him those touches. And it is telling to hear, to see and hear Doug Peterson say this in the press conference that, you know, Robinson is a three down back when healthy, but wheels up for Travis Etienne at the moment. I think he's a really strong pick. He's got some upside going as roughly anywhere between RB20, RB25. Talked about him all in football, which you can catch on Game Plus Network as well with Jake Seeley and myself. We dove into, you know, a lot of backfields and we talked about Travis Etienne and he likes him a lot more than I do. But there's a lot of upside. We just haven't seen him take a snap yet in the NFL, but clearly he's very familiar with Trevor Lawrence playing together in Clemson. I do believe that he will have a significant role even when James Robinson is back. Maybe not a double-digit carries out of the backfield. I do believe Robinson will be the lead and the goal line back, but you can line him up all over the place in the slot and catching balls out of the backfield. I'm excited to see Travis Etienne. He's really explosive. Other reports out of Jacksonville LaVisca Chenault. Trevor Lawrence had said this from Jacksonville.com, the website, Jaguars, familiar with them. Trevor Lawrence said, LaVisca Chenault looking a lot faster. Okay, there's been a lot of hype around LaVisca Chenault in each of the past two off seasons. Very disappointing last year. I mentioned some other pieces we saw DJ Chark leave and go to Detroit, but Jacksonville did a lot too. Of course, Christian Kirk, you know, anteed up with him, you know, paid him a lot of money. So there's a lot of different pieces in Jacksonville right now. I don't know. Zay Jones went there. I don't know if LaVisca Chenault is really worth your time. I think that Doug Peterson can find a way to make him productive. And Peterson said there are several ways to use him, but he also said, like, as a return man. And I don't think that's all that exciting if you have LaVisca in dynasty leagues or if you see him fall down draft boards. I think he could be a guy that we talk about at times next year as a fantasy waiver wire guy. It's like he showed up in a big way. I'm not ready to completely write him off. He's still super young. He may just land on another team in a couple years and you find a way to use him in a different way that Urban Meyer could not find a way to use him last year. There was one game where he played in the slot. And he was fantastic. He was great. And then all of a sudden they start using like Agnew and Chark and other guys in the slot. Then, you know, LaVisca kind of just fell down the depth chart a little bit. But We'll keep an eye on LaViska, but I don't have high expectations for him this year, but certainly it couldn't be as worse as last year. He was one of two players last season to not have a touchdown and have 60 grabs, and the other one was Cole Kmet. So it can't be worse, can it? I think he has a touchdown. I definitely believe Cole Kmet will have a touchdown. Marlon Mack in the news. Another report out of The Athletic. Aaron Reese, who covers the Texans, says that Houston will lean on Marlon Mack. He's a couple years removed from having a 1,000-yard campaign 2019 with the Indianapolis Colts. He had 8 touchdowns that season, just shy of 1,100 yards. He was really good. He was strong. And just Jonathan Taylor took over, right? They drafted Taylor. Taylor's a better back. You got Nyheim Hines out of the backfield catching balls there as well. So no real role for him last year, and certainly an opportunity for him to lead the backfield in touches. There's not a lot of pieces there. Of course, they did draft Damian Pierce, who I don't mind taking shots on as well. It's going to be some upside there. The offensive line in Houston is not awful. I don't think Davis Mills is all that bad either. They have a lot of holes defensively. This is a team that's going to be playing some catch-up. Mack could catch a couple balls out of the backfield. He is the veteran back on that squad. Rex Burkhead is still there. Devonta Freeman's still there as well, but I don't expect him to make it out of camp. But there is a role and opportunity for Mack, who I do believe is another back who suffered an Achilles injury and has made his way back in the NFL. He suffered that injury a couple years ago. And then on the way out to wrap up this block and just a couple NFL news items, reports that Julio Jones, again from The Athletic, that Julio Jones could potentially sign with the Baltimore Ravens. And although I don't expect a whole lot from Julio Jones, and last year was a complete headache, if you drafted him, I drafted him in some spots, not going to lie. I thought he would be okay with Ryan Tannehill. He was when he was on the field, just wasn't on the field all that much. He was dealing with some hamstring stuff, and you know, he's getting a little bit older, and he has dealt with a lot of injuries. Had a terrific career, of course. I mean, Hall of Famer, guys? Daily Handles in the house, NFL Hall of Famer? I think knocking on the door, yeah, you can certainly make a case. Recency bias, you would say no, because he's been so bad over the past couple of years, but he's had some real productive seasons, and the Ravens could use him. Just some experience in that wide receiver room. Listen to the amount of catches. These are the amount of catches, I just tweeted it out, that the wide receiver room has in Baltimore, and a lot of rookies, of course. Rashad Bateman is second on the team in career catches, and he's only played a season. 118 career catches for the wide receiver room. We got Devin Duvernay leading the way with 53. Rashad Bateman's got 46. Tylan Wallace has 2 catches. So I think they could use some experience, right? Especially like that would be so good for Bateman. I'm sure it wouldn't cost a whole lot to get Julio Jones. You know, limited. It's a team that runs first. Lamar Jackson's not the most accurate quarterback, but you know, just to have a veteran like Julio to kind of show Rashad Bateman the ropes, teach these guys a thing or two, just to have him there in the red zone, I think would be key as well. We'll see. I think the Ravens need to do something with their wide. It's Mark Andrews and then Bateman. It's like, I don't think we're excited about really anybody else. Julio Jones is a Hall of Famer. No questions asked. Are you kidding me? Yeah, I was like kind of running through it myself. He's definitely a Hall of Famer, but recency bias would tell you that maybe not, but I do believe that he is. That's it for the NFL news and notes. We actually will dive into some hockey stuff in the next block, and I see some MLB stuff there as well from Troy. What stats do you look at for baseball? What do you think are descriptive ISO, WAR, WOBA, FIP? Those are all statistics I look at quite a bit. And when I talked yesterday about Rafael Devers, like smashing right-handed pitching, looked at WOBA, I looked at WRC+, certainly looking at XFIP, FIP, you know, when there's a difference between the ERA and the XFIP, if the XFIP is a little bit higher than the ERA, it could mean that the pitcher is getting a little lucky. If the ERA is higher than the XFIP, it most likely means that, you know, unlucky, right? So if there's a huge gap between those two numbers, the ERA and the XFIP, and, you know, sometimes the way that they get those numbers would be like BABIP, average of batting balls in play, you know, strand rates. Usually the strand rate left on base percentage is hovering around 70%. If a guy is, up to 92%, clearly they have some swing and miss stuff. You know, they're stranding bases, but it's not, you know, sometimes that normalizes. Sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes you go the whole season and it doesn't, and it normalizes the following year. But that's a good way to kind of see if a pitcher's been a little lucky, if you maybe see some regression, positive regression, things like that. You know, the other way too, like if the strand rate is stuff around 52% and they got some swing and miss in their arsenal and they're just not really getting the punch outs, then you'd maybe potentially see that xFIP or that ERA really high and the xFIP low, and you feel like it'll normalize a little bit. But I'm definitely for baseball. We'll get into a little bit more, Troy, when I talk about, you know, some of the props that I like, but I really take a look at team woba. ISO is power. It's significant when you're looking for some, you know, extra base hits or some home runs and things like that. And also just, I like to look at fly ball rates and contact rates in terms of pitchers. We're going to talk about Aaron Civale, a pitcher of for Cleveland, the Guardians, and he's got a high fly ball rate, and he has given up a lot of home runs over the last two seasons, and the Minnesota Twins, I think, are in a pretty good spot. We'll dive into that a little bit more. Appreciate the question. You guys have any, like I said, you can always leave them there, even if you're watching the replay, and we'll always circle back. So we're going to take a little bit of a break from the NFL. We got the Washington Commander stuff towards the end of the show. We'll dive into some baseball stuff in block number four, but next up, we'll just recap last night. Just a quick little recap. It'll be tough for me to roll through the hockey quickly, but we'll roll through it, and we'll take a little bit of a sneak peek into game four, but of course we'll be with you guys tomorrow as game four will get underway in Tampa Bay tomorrow evening. So quick break, and we'll dive into what went right and what went wrong last night in the NHL. Keep her locked. Welcome back in. So last night, a big W from the Tampa Bay Lightning, a 6-2 victory on home ice. They've basically been perfect on home ice, right? I've said that off the top of the show. Andre Vasilevsky as well was really strong last night, 37 saves, only led in the two goals. The Lightning were much better right off the hop. You could see the jump in their step. They were much better at 5-5. We picked on Nikita Kucherov quite a bit here in this show. And I mean, he only had one shot at all strengths through the first two games, and then and zero at 5-5 and two shot attempts. We talked that there were like 31 other players who had more shots than him at 5-5 in the series, and 29 other players with more shot attempts at 5-5, and the superstars showed up. You know, Greg Wyshynski of ESPN joined Dangle Bazzelli last week, and I talked about just the ice time that they had, like that big three for the Lightning and Stamkos and Cirelli, and Stamkos scored and Cirelli scored and Kucherov had a couple assists. So these guys really showed up last night. And he just kind of said, like, listen, I mean, don't dive into too much of the ice time numbers. I mean, the altitude, it's a thing. It's something that Colorado is clearly used to. And, you know, these two teams only playing each other twice in the regular season and once in Colorado, and that, I believe, came in October. You know, it is an adjustment period for certain players. And last night we just saw a much different Tampa team. I think overall, if you look at the 5-5 numbers and you see that Colorado had the edge in shot attempts and scoring chances and high danger chances, and the expected goal for rate was just like hovering around 52% in favor of them. But the game was kind of out of hand in the third period. The shot attempts at 5-5 in the third period, I believe I have them up here. I think they were 22-2. 22-2. Like, we can't take too much stock into that. Like I said, the game was already completely out of hand. And at that point, yeah, I mean, 22-2, according to Natural Stat Trick, the shots 7-1, the scoring chances overall 38-20, but 17-1 in the third period in favor of the Avalanche. Like, come on. Like, the game was clearly out of hand at that point. The biggest thing for me, the adjustment that I thought that they made, and Drew Livingstone mentioned this on Dangle Bazzelli again, if you want a deeper dive into last night and a deeper dive into tomorrow, you know, you can catch that show at 5 Eastern or FTN Network YouTube page, FTNBets.com, iTunes, Spotify, all that good stuff. Was just the adjustments that Tampa Bay made really on the back end. Instead of kind of wrapping it up around the boards, they were doing some cross-ice passing and kind of just trying to avoid the heavy forecheck from the Avs. They're still so speedy. They get in on you. And you really noticed it in game two and a lot in game one as well, that they got in on the forecheck and they created Tampa. They created turnovers, a lot of just unforced errors from the Lightning and brutal puck management. They had one high danger chance in game two. One, it was from Corey Perry, and it was late in the game. Last night, they had five goals in the high danger area, in the slot, inner slot, right in front of the net. You saw it, and Corey Perry had one. And Corey Perry, by the way, NHL record. Did I already say this earlier? I mean, guys, call me out if I did. But Corey Perry last night, I know I said it on Dangle Bazzelli. So a couple shows here within the hour, I repeat myself a little bit, but Corey Perry made Stanley Cup history last night. He's the first player ever to score four goals on four different teams in the Stanley Cup Finals, the Ducks and then the Stars and then last year with the Habs and then this year here with Tampa Bay. And also Nikita Kucherov joined elite company last night, 25 plus points in three straight playoff runs. just the fourth player to do it all time. The last, may have heard of him, Wayne Gretzky, 83-85, and Mike Bossy in 81-83, and then Trottier, 80-82. So elite company, a couple Islanders in there, and Gretzky, of course, with the Oilers, and then Kucherov last night. So elite company for Nikita Kucherov, who left last night in that game as well. I don't know if you have it, Tyler, if you have it from Dangle Batselli, just some statistics from the Tampa Bay side of things. Beautiful, awesome, little cross promotion here, a little taste of some things that we do over at Dangle Batselli. So look at Kucherov, right? Just ripping him earlier yesterday, not ripping him, just saying like he needs to show up. It's that simple, and I'm not breaking any news. Like, the Stars have to be the Stars, and for the first two games for Colorado, the Stars were the Stars over there. I know Nathan MacKinnon has no goals, but he was getting shot attempts. He was still creating chances. So Kucherov, my goodness, like, 11 attempts last night, 6 shots on goal, 5 scoring chances, 2 helpers, left the game late. All signs point to him being okay for tomorrow night. Victor Hedman has been consistent in this series in terms of shot attempts. He had 9 shot attempts last night, 3 shots. We did get that prop last night. We had a Kucherov assist last night, which we got. We had a Palat point last night, which we got. And Corey Perry, you know, Corey Perry with Braden Point not playing in that game last night. Keep an eye on this moving forward. Something that we've talked a lot about on this show and Dangle Batselli is Corey Perry, the power play goal last night, the 4 attempts, all 4 of them on net and all 4 of them scoring chances. Usually his attempts come right in the slot. He's, you know, a pain in the butt. He gets in front of the goalies. He's into it last night with Kemper again last night. He just like parks his butt right in front of that net. He's good with the stick, deflections, rebounds, all that stuff. And that's what he had, the rebound goal last night that came off the bar. He scored. You know, Corey Perry gets on that first power play unit when Point doesn't play. And we hit that last night in our FTN Discord channel. A couple of us, it was late, the scratch from Point. It was game time decision. And then just jump in there. Hey guys, Corey Perry, you know, going to be on the first power play unit, you know, sprinkle a little 0.25 and a power play point or a power play goal. And I think a couple of us hit that one last night. And you see Hammer in there. We talked about the opening block. I do believe I repeated myself with Corey Perry's statistics, but the Hammer's been all over it. He jumped on Dangle Bet too and made that comment about a month ago. I believe maybe it was in the Rangers series, the Hammer, or against Florida. I think it may have been against Florida because Point got hurt in that game 7 against the Lightning. But you saw Cirelli on the list. He showed up, his first goal in the Stanley Cup playoffs in like 14 games. So the big boys showed up for Tampa. And moving forward, you know, before I lock anything in, and it'll have to be tomorrow, guys, I got to hear about Kucherov. Is he good to go? Nick Paul left last night, and I love the comment from Craig Smith to talk about Nick Paul. And when he came back into the lineup, he looked like an average beer league skater because he couldn't skate on that one knee. And when he jumped over the boards, he ended up finding the puck in the slot. And again, another slot goal, and he found the back of the net. Stamkos had the slot goal, Palat, which we were on for a point. And those are the guys I'm going to continue to kind of ride, like Palat for a point. Over at FanDuel, you can do the 2+. And this is what killed us last night when Kucherov, he really did crush us. We needed him for like one more shot, and he scored that goal early, but it was the right call. But I will go back to him. I don't mind going back to him. But over at FanDuel, you can do the 2+ shots, and I think there's some value there. Makar, do you have the Colorado ones? Yeah, giddy up. Tyler, all over it. MacKinnon, 13 shot attempts, 8 scoring chances, 6 shots. Landeskog, another goal. He's had the first goal in 4 games against the Lightning this series, this season. 9 attempts, 7 scoring chances. We talked exactly yesterday about how he scores his goals in the power play. He had a beautiful snipe on the second one, but the first one right in front of the net. Rebound, put it home. Makar, 10 attempts. My goodness. 5 scoring chances, 5 shots, 2 assists, and we had Rantanen for an assist as well. So we didn't get MacKinnon to have an assist. We didn't get Nichushkin can have the 2 shots or a point or a goal, but we did have a lot of these guys to have shots. So Rantanen will definitely be in on him again for an assist. He's got 7 assists here in this series. Cale Makar with all these shot attempts and all the ice time. So over at FanDuel with the 2+ shots, I would go like Hedman again because he gets all that ice time and he's been consistent. I'd put Makar in there. I'd put MacKinnon in there, but you know that when you put MacKinnon, you're probably going to be on the minus side of things in a 4-leg parlay. So if you wanted to go away from MacKinnon, you know, you could put in Palat. I have no problem going to Nichushkin. I know we got burned with Nichushkin yesterday. We had him in like 3 parlays. We absolutely got crushed. Everybody else hit. But he's a guy that I think could bounce back. The opportunities are still there for him. And he's still playing with MacKinnon up on that top line with Landeskog. So I don't mind going back to him. But Palat, I think, in your player pool. And then if there's no Burakovsky and Kadri can't play tomorrow, then I still think Lehkonen, you know, at plus 200 for an assist, or, you know, he was plus 140 for 3 shots last night. He'd get 3 shots. So you can kind of put him maybe in your player pool as well. But I would continue to ride the Colorado guys really for just the shots. There's not a lot of value to take these guys as singles if you're just like a single better, you know, which you can do in Ontario. I would look at the assist. The over is hit in all three games. I'll be on the over as well. And right now I do have a lean to Tampa, but I've been on Tampa every game in this series. I expected it to go seven, and I am on Tampa to win the series. So, I mean, as you see here, it's a pick 'em, but you can get the six. I'd be surprised if we're chatting tomorrow and it's still six. I would be surprised. I still think that we're going to see a lot of goals. Vasilevskiy was fantastic last night. We still saw eight goals. So we'll break away from that. We'll dive a little bit deeper into it tomorrow, and we'll see if some of those Tampa guys return. Kadri, of course, returning would be a big boost. He was spotted skating yesterday. I saw him take one shot. That's a step forward. He's recovering from a thumb injury. He can skate around all he wants and stick handle. I need to see him take some shots, and I don't believe we'll see him tomorrow. I think he's really close. I think we could see him at one moment in the series, at some moment, especially if Tampa wins tomorrow night. But I don't think we'll see him take a lot of faceoffs, and I don't know how productive he'll be shooting the puck. That's it for the hockey talk. We're going to break, and we got some baseball talk. Going to hit the waiver wire, and I got a couple picks and some props for you guys, and then we'll round out the show with just a little bit of Washington Commanders talk. Can't dive too deep into that squad. They're not very good. We'll break, and we'll be back here on Mean Streets. Keep her locked. Welcome back in. Before we hit the MLB waiver wire, let's bring up Tyler. Just a few MLB props that I like here for this evening. Going right back to the Red Sox. I know Daily Handle may not like this, but they did work out for us pretty good yesterday. We had them, and we had Rafael Devers 1.5 total bases. We needed one more run. Didn't get that. 5.5 was plus money. They were stuck on 5. Going right back to it, as you see here. I just think that they're in a really good spot against Bo Abriski of the Detroit Tigers. We'll get into some of his numbers in a little bit, but what we said about Rafael Devers yesterday, the same applies here. Against righties, he's been so strong. He's got 31 extra base hits. It's one off the league high now. He leads the Red Sox with 31 extra base hits. His slash line, all, like I said it yesterday, video game-like. I mean, you could just kind of play the tape back. I don't want to be super repetitive, but it worked. So let's kind of go back to the well here. The slash line, all the average on base percentage, the slug, the OPS, the ISO, the WOBA, the WRC+, all top 10 in baseball. He's inside the top 5 in terms of average and hits against righties as well. And the extra base hits are key for me. But the matchup here against Bo Brisky. So you see, I got Jarren Duran for a run. He's hitting leadoff for the Red Sox. We had this in the FTM bet tracker yesterday as well to score a run. And the Red Sox have one of the highest team implied totals. If I think that they're going to get 5-6 runs here, I feel like Duran's going to get on base. And they just have three hitters inside the top 7 in terms of hits against righties. It's not just Devers. It's JD Martinez and Xander Bogaerts as well. So Duran's in a pretty good spot. He's speedy. He had a triple the other night, which came around to score. Last night, he had a single, stole a base. Devers drove him in with a double. Boom. All of that was just like unit, unit, unit. Like, you love to see that stuff. Same game parlays, it kind of correlates. If you want to get in on him, you know, getting on base, scoring a run, and then maybe Devers with over 1.5 total bases, JD over 1.5 total bases, maybe one of those guys to have an RBI, maybe Xander, you're going to get him at plus money. He's kind of always the forgotten one because he doesn't have the same sort of power as JD or Devers. But I like these guys again. So before we get into Manaea and the Twins towards the end, just going to talk about Brisky just a little bit. And it kind of correlates a little bit, Troy, to what you asked earlier. So he's got the 4.97 ERA on the road. He's been a little bit better at home in Detroit, but Fenway, not the best pitcher's park. And this lineup, I just like it. They score a lot of runs. But he's allowed 12 homers, 23 runs on 49 hits and 54 innings. So he's got the 3.79 ERA and the 4.63 xFIP. So this is a great example of the ERA being better than the xFIP. And I believe that the xFIP is a little higher because of a couple things. I mentioned strand rate, left on base percentage, according to Fangraphs. It's at 85.4%. It's slightly high. League average is around 70. And it's not that he can't maintain this, but he doesn't strike a lot of guys out. 6K per nine. That is not great. It's not even a strikeout per inning. So you would expect that strain rate to kind of come down a little bit. And another factor for me, he's got the 84% contact rate, which is one of the highest marks in baseball. Anything above 79%, I feel like, is a red flag. So he's not striking out a batter per inning. He's kind of walking some dudes, and he's giving up a lot of contact, and the fly ball rate is at 42%. Those are all red flags. Anything above 40, pretty high. That's why he's allowed 12 homers. So I think Devers is in play for a bomb as well if you want to go 0.25. So riding with the Red Sox, against Bo. And then you saw Sean Manaea on the board. If you want to bring that up one more time, we'll get the odds. Minus 140 is a little steep, but maybe you can put it into a parlay. Earlier, it was at minus 135. And I do believe we had a couple in the bet tracker. Josh Gross had another great day yesterday calling stolen bases against Noah Syndergaard, who's allowed the most stolen bases in baseball. He's the slowest pitcher to the plate. Josh is always all over that stuff. But I think he had, I think it was him or maybe MLB Dream had Manaea in there a little bit earlier. So if you have the FTM betting package, you follow FTN alerts on the Twitter machine, you get notified right away. But I still like this price, maybe not as a single, but into a parlay. I do expect Sean Manaea to get six or seven strikeouts here in this spot up against Arizona. They have a top 10 strikeout rate in baseball against left-handed pitching. And Sean Manaea is something that he did pretty easily in the first few starts of the season. He was clearing this number, and I think his very first start of the season, he actually went up against Arizona, and he cleared this number. He had seven strikeouts and seven scoreless. It was actually his San Diego debut, but he cleared this number at six of his first seven starts, just once in his last seven, but he's got a K per nine that's at nine. I expect him to go about seven innings, so if he can go seven innings, he can get to seven strikeouts. He's got a sub-four ERA. He's very strong, and Arizona, good matchup inside the top 10 here. And then Aaron Civale, quickly, because we do got to get to Washington, always rambling off the top of the show. I'm excited to talk to you guys on Game Plus Network. But Civale, six home runs allowed in seven starts. His last start was on May 20th. He's going to start again here today. He may not go deep, but he got rocked against Minnesota on May 13th, 4 2/3. He gave up six runs on seven hits, and he gave up two homers in that start. He allowed 23 home runs last year in 124 innings, 44% fly ball rate for last season was 37%, 45% fly ball rate this year, and the contact rate, again, high. So you're checking boxes here. Bo, contact rate, fly ball rate, opportunity for Red Sox, opportunity for Twins to score six runs plus money. Luis Araza is amazing against righties. I couldn't find a prop on him to score, but I'll have it in the FTM bet tracker. I expect him to get on base. He's got like 60-some-odd hits, leads the Twins in hits against righties. So expect him to get on base, score maybe a run or two. And then we got Byron Buxton, who's got 12 bombs against righties. I like him maybe to have over 1.5 total bases and to have a home run. And maybe you can take a shot on Carlos Correa or Max Kepler as well, the lefty on righty. 45% fly ball rate this year, 37 last year, 23 bombs last year, 6-7 starts this year, and the 79% contact rate. So red flags across the board. I think the Twins are good on the money line, but I also like them to score six or seven runs here today. So attack maybe some of their hitters at the top of the order, maybe a couple total bases or a couple bombs there for the Red Sox and the Twinkies. Maybe we'll save the waiver wire stuff because we are running a little long here. We do want to get into the Washington Commanders. So we'll break. Maybe I'll combine Washington, and we'll do quickly waiver wire stuff in the next segment. Keep her locked. I really wanted to talk some waiver wire stuff with you, so we'll quickly do it. And this is a list that I came up with. A lot of these guys may be owned, but if you see any of them kind of hanging around your waiver wire, I mean, why not take a shot on them? Up at the top, you got the prospects, right? Riley Green, O'Neal Cruz, CJ Abrams. I think the highest ceiling does belong to Riley Green. I kind of view him as a little bit of a better hitter than Cruz. Cruz, man, he was great last night in his... In his 2022 MLB debut, we saw a couple moments from him last year, very, very small sample size. But I do believe Riley Green has, if I was projecting the rest of the way for him, I view him as maybe like I think he can be a 250, 265 hitter. I think he can get in between those two averages. I think he's got a little bit more pop, but he's a 5-tool player. Cruz is a 5-2 player, a 6-7 shortstop. And last night, I tweeted it earlier, three things that he did in his 2022 debut. This is from MLB Pipeline. The hardest throw by an infielder this season, 96.7 miles per hour. The hardest hit ball of the year by a Pirate, which isn't saying much, but it's 112.9 miles per hour. And the three fastest sprint speeds of the year by a Pirate as well, 31.5, 30.7, and 30.3. So a very small sample size. He's 5-for-14. He's got two doubles, a homer, four runs, seven RBI through his first three games, just like an immediate pickup. And I do believe we'll see double-digit home runs and double-digit steals from him the rest of the way, but the average may be around 240. Maybe I'm underselling him a little bit, but I think he's very, very intriguing. Abrams, I don't believe, has the same sort of ceiling that we'll see this year, but I do believe he should be picked up as well. And he is available. Like, you may have missed out on Green or Cruz, but it's possible these guys are hanging around in 10-team leagues. He certainly should be owned in keeper and dynasty leagues as well. Andrew Vaughn, Starting to really come around. He's got a lot of power. White Sox lineup is starting to get healthier again. I love Vaughn. I think he should be rostered. Voit is another first baseman. San Diego, you know, you're going to see Tatis back. The offense has been good without him. Bertie, in case you need some stolen base, you see the triple eligibility on Yahoo. Pollock again, you know, he was hit near the top of the order, but then we had Tim Anderson return last night. So, you know, he could still help you out, even hitting in the 5-6 spot for now until, you know, Eloy Jimenez returns there as well. Dominguez, if you need saves, Walker's hanging around. Not a big strikeout guy, but the last two starts have been a lot of strikeouts from him over his last two outings. But he's still surprisingly hanging around waiver wires. And Alex Thomas is on a lengthy double-digit hit streak, and he's got not a ton of power, but he's really disciplined at the plate. I think he can help you out as well. Maybe we can dive a little bit deeper into that tomorrow, but wanted to give some love to Cruz because it was just a fantastic 2022 debut. My goodness, what a gun to first. 6'7 shortstop who can throw and play short like that. Phenomenal. And this is the time of the year, end of June, where we start to see some of these kids play. We're going to wrap up with just a little bit of Washington Commander talk. For the Washington fans, I apologize. We'll get into it deeper later on in the week, but we'll touch base on Washington, what to expect in the final block here on Mean Streets. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back in one final time. So, Tyler, let's start here with Washington's odds. Of course, winning the division. There are long shots across the board. 5-1, they're winning the NFC. 33-1, Super Bowl 75-1. Last year, 7 W's. Win total at 7.5. We'll roll through their schedule next episode. We'll dive into these guys a little bit deeper tomorrow, but there really isn't a whole lot to say. I don't really love their squad. I think they're a step behind the Eagles and the Cowboys. I think they could potentially flirt with like a 500 record and maybe knock on the door for the playoffs, but ultimately I don't believe so. And we'll dive into here some of their weapons as we switch over to, these are just from NFFC. So Carson Wentz, we're not drafting him maybe as your second quarterback, but even in a super flex league, I don't think you really want him. If he's your third quarterback, it's a best ball stack you could stack up if you wanted to go Wentz and McLaurin and maybe Dotson and get Logan Thomas in there. This time last year, Logan Thomas was getting drafted as a top 12 tight end. I think he's, you know, a decent last play and pick and best ball leagues because, you know, Carson Wentz likes his tight ends and there's really not a whole lot there. Ricky Seals-Jones left. He got, you know, I think it's Bates, as a backup tight end. Curtis Samuel, just didn't see him on the field last year, so don't know what to expect. I think Dotson is a pretty good target as wide receiver 65. I think there's some upside there. But this, you know, I'm not in on Gibson. Brian Johnson was drafted, and I think he could steal goal line work from Antonio Gibson. And J.D. McKissic was brought back. And McKissic's just a couple years removed from catching 80 balls. And he played a lot of third down for them last year, and he played a lot of two-minute drills. So I think Antonio Gibson is a clear fade for me. RB20, it's just a little rich. I know the community wants him to be a three-down back. I just don't think we'll see it this year. And on the way out, Washington, this is their 12th different starting quarterback since 2017 with Carson Wentz. You got to hope that they figure it out this year, but I'm not too optimistic. Have a good one, guys, and we'll be back tomorrow. Cheers.